Today's sales professionals are challenged to establish trusting relationships with the right prospects. They face buyers that choose to self-educate and not engage with a salesperson until they're ready to begin the buying process. With social selling, sales professionals use social networks and digital content to build their professional brand, their company's brand, and create experiences that enable buyers to buy. Welcome to the Linking into Sales podcast, the social selling podcast hosted by Martin Brossman and Greg Heyer. Let's start linking into sales.
Raj, it is terrific to have you on our hangout, Linking into Sales. And Greg's out taking care of customers, my cohort here, Greg Heyer. So it's just you and I having some time together to talk about having more humor in sales. So Raj, would you just introduce yourself a minute, and then I'll brag about you a minute. We'll roll into it.
Well, it's good to be here, Martin. Good to see you, even if it's just on screen. And I'm glad at least Greg is taking care of business. Somebody's got to do that. I am a longtime entertainer, toured as a stand-up comic for 8 years, and then got into corporate entertainment and corporate speaking. And so what I do today, a big part of it is helping business professionals and sales professionals use humor at work, on the job, because the benefits are just too tremendous to not use humor as a tool. It's just a valuable, valuable tool.
Excellent. And really, we got to know each other through the work of Carolina Health and Humor, which you've taken over.
And, yes.
For people who don't know it, I had the honor of taking a humor cart to cancer patients for several years and was named Volunteer of the Year by Governor Hunt, thanks to Ruth that started all this. And then you've taken the torch and moved it forward, which I'm very proud of. It's in good hands. But the thing I want to talk about is me going to your comedy class and to find out we both still share telling the story of how in Charlie Goodnight's comedy, Amateur Night, I was booed off stage. And that's where I think we should start, because everyone gets a chuckle when I say it, you know?
You took that class with more perseverance than anyone I've ever seen. And so much credit goes to you, because you mastered it to a degree. You went back up, you got the laughs, you didn't get booed off. I think you took the class, I don't know, four times or whatever. But man, you know, you showed what perseverance does. And being stand-up comic, being stand-up funny, stand-up comedy funny, which is a term that you coined, is different than using humor at work or humor anywhere else, really. So it's a difficult thing. It's much easier once you know how, once you know the basics, to use humor at work very effectively. It's not like trying to be a stand-up comic.
Well, here's the piece that was so valuable, and really, I want to tell the lesson I learned out of the class is, people always laughed when I was teaching classes. So I thought, you know, Raj has instruction here, but I know how to do this. And then I got on that stage with blinding lights, unable to see a room full of drunk people. And I, you know, it was dead air. I mean, the only thing I heard was the boos, which indicated it was time to leave the stage. And I want to tell you, it was such a great experience, because I remember driving home and I go, I don't ever remember feeling this level of humiliation, except maybe rejected by girls in the past. But that's about the only level.
At least they laughed at you, though.
At least they laughed. And, you know, and just, you know, at least I got to be close to them before they rejected me. Yeah. And so I remember in the car, I don't know that I shared it with you, but I said to myself, you know, this is going to be great material. I need to embrace this time. And that's one of the things I talk about is, if you're living out of your commitment or your feelings, you know, are you trying to save face or be your commitment? And I've used it. And then to find out over the years, we both used the story in teaching, you know?
Right. Yeah.
But it is one of the cornerstones. You know, you have to break some eggs to make an omelet. And you have to be willing to face some of the humiliation to develop your humor. And to me, this is a very important piece that I think we often aren't teaching enough of, the ability of facing humiliation, embarrassment. I heard someone one time say, well, I can't show my face there anymore. And my view is, if I can't show my face somewhere, then I need to personally clean it up so I can again.
Well, that's one of the benefits of humor. It's therapeutic. And by laughing at ourselves, especially, or our follies or whatever's going on in life, you know, it empowers us. It enables us to put that problem in perspective and work through it and tackle it. I had a woman in one comedy class, I don't know if you remember, she said, I've always wanted to try stand-up comedy, but I'm afraid people might laugh at me. And we laughed at her. You know, we said, you're off to a good start. So humility is a huge part of it. You know, you got to take a chance. And people always say, well, I don't have a sense of humor. You know, I'm just not funny. And everybody, we were all born with a sense of humor. Yep. So my book is called How to Be Funnier, you know, not How to Be Funny, because we're already funny. It's just like anything, once you learn some of the basics, you can do it a lot better. And well, like learning a sport or music, you just learn the basics. Hold
on, what do you say are some of the basics? Because I agree, it's a muscle that can be developed. I mean, I really proved with that boot off stage that I had one muscle developed, which was humor in a presentation where it was very contextualized. But I hadn't developed the next level. And I need to tell you, Raj, I am much funnier now as a presenter from your training than I was before.
Good. That's great to hear. Because you were funny before. And, you know, part of having a good sense of humor is laughing and catching other people's humor, which you are great at. I mean, you're good on stage and you're good in the audience. So, but, you know, you've probably heard children laugh an average of 300 times a day. Adults laugh an average of 15 times a day. And I think that's just to go to happy hour. But we start out using humor. And then as we get older, you know, we're taught, oh, you got to be serious. You got to quit being funny. And so a lot of people lose that ability. And it's a muscle. So the more we use it, the stronger that gets. And that's part of it, is just making it a priority and using that muscle with a little know-how.
Well, one of the things that are concerns is, of course, political sensitivity, not being, as a kid, we might have laughed at jokes, which would be very inappropriate to publicly mention now. Yeah. So there does need to be some sensitivity as a professional. And one of your ideas that you... that I heard and was echoed actually by a student in one of my classes is knowing the difference between laughing with and laughing at. And I'd love for you to just talk a minute about that, because, you know, I, as someone who was diagnosed with ADD and dyslexic, I have a license to joke about that topic different than I might if I was did not have it. So would you distinguish that? Because that's, to me, a very good starting place for sales professionals to work on.
It is. And using humor at work has to be used smartly, has to be used effectively, not defectively. So we don't want to be putting down our clients or customers. And you're right. You know, we want everybody laughing, so we don't want to be laughing at them. So where I start, whether I'm talking to a comedy class or a group of sales professionals, I start with self-deprecating humor. And that's where we target ourselves. Become an expert at self-deprecation. You will be a very funny person. And more importantly than that, in the business world, you will be likable. Self-deprecation gives us likability. And I don't think there's a guy, I think it was Tim Sanders, who wrote a book, The Likeability Factor. And he talked about how important likability is. When you think about it in life, especially in sales, being likable is of the utmost importance. So starting with self-deprecation, and it's safe, it's easy because we've all got things we can joke about. And it's effective because everybody loves to laugh at us, you know. So that's a great place to start.
To laugh at us as the target is the thing.
Right. When I go, I did a show a couple of nights ago, and I started out, just for an example, Martin, I started out just talking about how I love doing stand-up comedy because it keeps me young. I forget my age when I'm on stage. And I said, you know, just a week ago, I did a show at a college. And before the show, I was flirting with one of the students, you know. And she said, I said to her, you know, you remind me of my old girlfriend. And she said, well, that's awesome. And you remind me of my old boyfriend's grandfather. And it really hurt. But but that's the kind of thing that, you know, just that real stuff that we share. It actually makes us more likable and stronger. It's great.
Yeah, it's a muscle to develop, and it can, there's a limit. We aren't, you know, I'm realistic in a sales field that many of our professionals live with some real vicious predators that are looking for any weak point to try to tear them apart. I know that from my years in corporate America. So this is not like revealing every flaw, you know. It's about taking a little piece out and letting people be comfortable with having a joke with it.
Yep. And we can beat them to the punch, too. If they're teasing us about something, we can put it back on ourselves, and then it disarms them. It takes away their power to make fun of us because we're already doing it in a better way. Really, really effective. I can give you a quick example on that, just working with a guy, Bob Hoare. He's a B2B salesperson, and people were teasing him about his last name. Mm-hmm. And so we devised a thing. When he gives his presentation, he'll start by saying, my name is Bob Hoare. You spell that H-O-A-R. And again, it takes away the ridicule, the teasing. He's making fun of himself. People like him. So,
yeah. I remember one time in the corporate world, I had been the first person at IBM to take the what's called the A-plus certification. It's a technical thing. And I read slower. So, you know, it took me longer than others. And one of the predatory guys came up to me in front of everyone, goes, you know, Martin, you took longer than others to complete this course. What do you think that means? And I looked at him in a puzzled look, and I said, I think it means maybe I'm a little dense or simple. What do you? And the room burst out laughing, actually, at him at the time.
Yeah.
You know, getting them to the punch with that's important. And I think that's a beginning safe place for a sales professional to look at it. And I'm big on practicing in safe environments first.
Yeah.
You know, practice that in front of the customers, practice in front of some other people, and having what, you know, like humor buddies where you can develop your pitch.
Right.
There's another piece on this that I think is very important you taught me, and that's the idea of half-baked is not going to look completed. That when you work on making notes on humor, and you talked about keeping note cards with you in the class and the other, allow your jokes to be incomplete until you get that punch with them. And I think that to me is an important piece. When they start and you develop them, that they're not going to be complete. And then you're going to look for first what gets a chuckle with you, but what really matters is what gets a laugh with others. So would you talk a little bit about that?
That's kind of what separates the real funny people from the mildly funny people is, you know, taking that extra step to push yourself instead of using a general cliche that everybody uses, try to be a little original, come up with something a little unique, push yourself to make it stand-up comedy funny. And in this sense, that really helps to make the joke. And there's different things we can do. Simple things like the reverse adds a lot of surprise. And these are things that people do all the time without realizing it. But by being aware, by becoming aware of these tools, people can use them more deliberately and more effectively. So, for example, one of my favorite comedians is Rita Rudner. And she talks about how she broke up with her boyfriend. She says he wanted to get married and I didn't want him to. She's so funny. So that's just a little self-deprecating, very self-deprecating. It's reverse, right? Because you can see how it creates a surprise in the end. We're thinking she's going to say I wanted to get married and he didn't want to. I broke up with my boyfriend. We thought she was going to say he wanted to get married to somebody. He wanted.
We know where you're going.
Promises that it's not revealed to the last word that he wanted to get married to somebody else. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And that's what happens in the surprise. It's concealed. We just keep it concealed until that very last punchline, punch word gives it away. And just learning that one technique is amazing. My son keeps a hamster in his bedroom. And at first the smell was, you know, terrible, but then the hamster got used to it. A silly little joke, but you can see how that's a reverse. We expect, you know, we're talking about the smell of a hamster, we're talking about the smell of a son, which unless you actually have a son of your own, you you don't know about. So little easy techniques like that make a big difference in the surprise.
There's one, the I was trying to think of an example for me of half-baked, and I remember walking down the street in downtown Raleigh and seeing the park benches and thinking, okay, you know, the homeless people are here and what could they put a sign on? And then I came up with an idea, but when I came up with it, it was actually a joke on the homeless people, which would have been to me.
Yeah.
But then I twisted it to, the dark side of me got a little chuckle, but see, you got to watch that. That's a laughing act. So
right.
That's not for humor. Then I came up with the idea of saying the city is trying to save money, wants to do with something for the homeless people downtown. So they put signs on the park bench that said, if you lived here, you'd be home by now. You know, and now that's a joke at the city, not at the expense of the expense of the homeless person.
So right.
Me was a beginning of I'm trying to show in a big of how it evolved.
Yep. And that's a great example. And again, it's really awareness. You know, the thing that makes people funnier. And when I did comedy, I realized that every comic I did comedy with became funnier as they went on. And most of us weren't real funny when we started. And that's part of what my book is about. What were the things we were doing that made us funnier? And these are the things that, you know, I talk about when I work with salespeople to help them to tap into their sense of humor. And it's an awareness. It's an awareness of who are we targeting? You know, are we making fun of our associate or our client or, you know,
Is that a safe target in right. that context? And then who else might hear it? It's just like in an emergency room, in the break room, there could be a level of humor that keeps them sane, but not appropriate to record or put on YouTube.
That's right.
So understanding the listening of it. And of course, now everything's transparent, so you need to pay a little more attention.
Yeah, you really do. Fortunately, this will never be shown in public, but But I was given a talk at a hospital recently and the receptionist raised her hand and said, I tried using humor, never again, it doesn't work. And I said, well, what happened? And she said, well, I had a call from an element and she said, I need to make an appointment for my sick husband. And I told her, well, the first appointment we have is in 2 weeks. And the woman said, well, 2 weeks, my husband could be dead by then. And the receptionist said to her, well, that's not a problem. Just give us a call. We'll cancel his appointment. She wondered why the woman didn't laugh. The woman hung up. Well, you know, that would have been funny retold in the lunchroom.
Yeah, in privacy.
Yeah, she said, you know what I felt like saying, or, you know, but the woman was looking for empathy, and that sarcasm didn't work. So a better example, I was in Lowe's food the other day, and rush hour, you know, people are tense and irritable, and they're waiting in the express lane. The guy finally goes, he picks up his bag, takes one step on the bottom of the bag, breaks, and all the cans and everything rolling across the floor. And now people are really ticked off. And the cashier, quick thinking, she says, oh, I'm so sorry, sir. That's not supposed to happen until you get to your driveway.
Right.
People laughed. You could feel the tension dissolve, Martin. Yeah. It just dissolved. And I asked the cashier, I said, tell me, have you used that line before? And she said, yes. Yeah. Every time I cut the bottom of the bag.
Every time I put that little razor slip to make sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Another piece of this is they talk about timing, but I like that you're testing out what works and what doesn't, and the vote is the audience. I thought that was a very important piece of what you said. The ultimate vote is, do you get laughs off of it or not? And so, you know, that to me is another thing that I learned from you is you just, some things you think are funny, but they don't work in the audience.
Yep. The audience is half of your show, and they're the important half. And they tell you, yes, we like this. No, we don't like that. And smart comedians or professional comedians, anybody that's going to work. And the same with salespeople. They have to think, why weren't they laughing at that? And then if you can rework it to make it work, great. If you can't, you get rid of it. And again, in the workplace, the beauty is our object, our goal is not to make people laugh. You know, we have a bigger purpose. It's to establish good relationships. It's to have our clients trust us and like us, and it's to develop bonds with them so that they'll converse with us and be open to us and you know, trust what we're selling. And so we have to make sure that the humor we use facilitates the bigger purposes of what we're trying to accomplish at work. And humor is perhaps one of the best tools we can use if it's used correctly. If it's not, it can really backfire.
Part of the thing I think is that you mentioned that I like is training yourself to start capturing and listen to humor in everyday life. And in my own presentation, Instant Humor Just Add Life, that I'm excited we're going to get on your website. You know, that's to me one of the beginning muscles is you got to train your ears to listen for something to laugh at. And I learned that with the cancer patients taking the humor card around, I realized the goal wasn't me being funny. The goal was them saying something and making me laugh. That gave them real empowerment.
Yep. And we want to reciprocate naturally to people that share their humor with us. It's one thing that makes people very unfunny, even people that have a good sense of humor, is if the ego gets in the way, you know, and they're men in particular sometimes try to use humor as a one-upmanship or whatever. And so that can backfire big time, again, especially in the workplace. So you got to be aware.
That's similar to the laugh at versus laugh with.
It is.
Any of the one-up is a laugh at.
Right.
The way to, and there really are people that are trained, and how do I put them in a weak spot to so that I'm in a power play. And I don't know those people. That's worked enough for them in their life. I don't think they'll ever get better. But that would be harder to work with if that's your primary strategy of working with someone.
Yes. Those people are unlikable in many instances. So
they have to use intimidation. They have no other tools, right?
Yeah, they don't. They think they don't. But keeping it personal is a really good thing. The more personal you keep it, generally, the funnier and the more real it is. You know, and it can be anything. You don't have to talk about business per se in the sales setting. A lot of times, personal things are better and safer. You talk about, you know, how you're not hearing as well, or.
Well, do you mind sharing the one of being the new father and getting diapers? That was one of my favorites. I don't know if you remember that joke. It's been so long.
God,
You know, you found out that it said, you got the diapers and found out it said, what was it, only 15 pounds?
Oh, yeah, they, I wasn't very good at changing diapers. A lot of times I would forget to change the diapers. And I mean, you've got to change them every day. It says, you know, for 10 to 15 pounds on the package, but they don't hold anywhere near that amount.
That's it. That's it. That's great. You know,
something like that. But yeah.
So that goes into another thing you talked about, is a real good comic is able to make humor without having to use blue humor. And I want you to talk about that, because I met a comic and said that, and he says, oh, I'm really funny. And you know, and I said, well, my instructor said, and you could see it unnerved him, because he really couldn't make a joke without using shock profanity. And I think, and that was something you really drilled into us in finding models for us to look at. And mine, one of mine was Stephen Wright, because it's a real, it's pretty darn clean humor, but it's, but well-written in my view, and not my style completely, but talk about that, of what's blue humor versus the other, because one to me is a really takes work to create, and the other is easy because you can use shock value.
Yeah. A lot of, especially beginner comics, you know, will rely on F word and all these, you know, foul bombs. Surprise is a really important element in humor. And, you know, audiences still will laugh a bit just hearing, you know, foul, gross things, just for the kind of the shock and surprise value of it. But the problem is the comics that start out with that, if they get a little laugh from just being vulgar, then generally that's where they stay. And as they try and progress, you know, they're not becoming funnier. It's kind of a dead end. Also, it's limiting how much work they can get. One, because they're not funny. Two, not all venues, you know, want someone that's foul. So there are comics, you know, Richard Pryor, you know, who came from, you know, inner city. I mean, the words he used, that was him. That was intrinsic to who he was. He wasn't using those words to try and make it funnier. He was being himself. So what I tell people is, if, you know, that's where you come from, that's who you are, that's who you're going to maybe be doing your comedy to, then run with it. But, yeah, that, you know, foul language is kind of like a spice. If we use a little bit of it now and then, it has a big impact. But if we're always swearing, we know people like that, it loses any impact.
But of course, in sales, know, that's why it's so important, because in sales, I'm sorry, you're not going to be using blue humor. You need to work on the other and know it takes more work. I mean, I loved how you said it takes about a year for a comic to create about an hour of stand-up routine, and to realize this is hard thinking. This is hard work. Don't expect it. if you think you aren't funny, well, you probably haven't worked hard enough.
In fact, 15 or 20 minutes generally in the first year of really funny stuff. It takes a long time. And again, the things we use in sales, you know, don't have to be quite as powerful as they do for stand-up comic. And we can use other people's material, but in general, using your own material is going to work best and be funniest and be more real.
Well,
and part of it, I might add, just one quick thing is the spontaneity. You know, as people learn how to become funnier and learn about self-deprecation and reverse and some of the techniques, they also become funnier spontaneously. And that's a huge, huge asset, obviously, you know.
And that's an important point that I learned from your class is, if you're doing presentations and sales, a certain level of what we called hack material, you can get by with. If you're going to do stand up, you want to get labeled as a hack quickly, steal material. And I remember when I got off stage after not the boot time, the time they started really laughing.
Yeah.
And I walked down and there was a sharp woman there that had done a lot of humor. And she said, you know, there was no hacked material in your act. That was excellent.
That's
and
a compliment.
You taught us that. You know, and huge. That's, go ahead.
Sorry, I just want to say that's a huge compliment, Martin, for a stand-up comic.
Yeah, and so there, the piece of it is, if you're in sales, you can get away with using some other people's material, but make the personal challenge to move towards original, because then you really have something you're proud of. And Raj, when I'm speaking, I'll use a little hacked in training sometime, you know, something from Robin Williams or someone like that. But my goal really is to get my own. And,
sure.
And so it's safer there, but you get on stage, you better be original material. And it's what really got me to respect someone who actually is on stage doing stand-up and why your class was so important.
Yep. And that's the big difference between stand-up comedy and using humor off stage. But as far as going for likability, you know, being clean, being self-deprecating, knowing, you know, how to target that humor is really important and works the same way on stage. Even comics that make fun of people in the audience, they have to know how to do that while maintaining their likability. So huge, huge thing. But a couple of little things before we end that your listeners can keep in mind. You know, shorter is funnier. If you tell a long joke, the longer the joke, the funnier people expect that to be. You know, you're taking people's time and they expect... It's like blowing up a balloon. The bigger that balloon gets, the louder the pop we figure it's going to be.
Better be, yeah.
Better be, yeah. And so quick little jokes, much more effective. And when you tell a joke, if people start laughing, let them laugh. Don't start another joke or, you know, start your sales pitch. Let them enjoy the laugh. It's called stepping on your laughs. And it's an important thing because if we do that, people aren't able to enjoy laughing, which is what it's all about.
I want to mention that because that was very valuable for me to learn as an instructor. You as a speaker and working with even in sales with people, the don't step on your laugh. I think of it, Roger, like an audio. Let it ring out.
Yep.
And then you start speaking when it's at the tail end. That was invaluable. That actually amplifies the humor. And I learned that in your class. Before, I'd say the joke and then I'd go on to the next thing. Now I really work to pause and I call it ring out, like an audio file. You know, it does that. And it intensifies it. It also gets me present that it happened. So I can do a callback, which you also teach, of referencing back to a joke and getting more laughs out of it. So, you know, that was, I want to just say, that was one of the real gold mines I learned from you, is that let it ring out. And I think that's something I don't think people naturally have. They'll tell the joke and then they nervously go on to the next, but they don't let it ring out.
Yep. That's a big thing. Or they laugh absurdly hard because they're afraid nobody else will laugh. And that can be a problem too.
Which leads to another book. I hope you still have your Savers book. Do you still sell that?
I do. Yeah.
Okay. You know, that's to me another tool you gave. I just said a joke. Told a joke to a group. No one laughed. And I said, it clearly was a joke about me. Okay. And something I did. No one laughed. And I said, well, I think that's probably funnier when someone else tells it. And then they laughed at that. Because obviously, you know, it's about me. If it wasn't funny to them, it wouldn't be funny if someone else told it, you know?
Yeah.
And that was another tool I learned, is Savers. And you do have, hopefully we got to get that one probably on Kindle at some point. That was a power one. Giving you ideas of lines, and you gave me just enough in that book that I could then generate on my own. And
right.
Look, if you bomb, you don't want to, you know, if something hits the floor, you don't want to ignore it. You want to own it so you can move on. And that's, to me, another thing that I think is important in sales. If it doesn't work, don't act like it didn't happen. Give a little saver then. It's almost like I acknowledge I failed here. Let's go on.
Yeah. It shows that you're tuned in. And by the way, that was a great saver example that you just gave. It takes the fear out of using humor, because we know that we can still get a laugh. We can resolve it. What happens is, in humor, tension is a huge thing. Tension.
Right.
And then when people laugh, they release that tension. And so when someone tells a joke and people don't laugh, it builds tension in the audience, and that tension sits there unresolved until we use a saver or another joke. And so the saver is just very, very effective. It's a very easy way of getting a laugh and keeping in control of the situation. The audience loves it. They want us to be in control. They love it, and they'll laugh hard. And it shows humility. Again, it's, you know, often very self-deprecating. So, yeah, savers are great. I'm glad you thought of that. I forgot about it.
Well, you remember it when you're working with people. And that's what matters. I have to actually say I've got severe allergies. And someone was noticing my one eye so swollen. And they were looking at me today. And I could tell they were noticing my eye swollen. I said, you ought to see the other guy.
Yeah.
I said, no, I didn't get in a fight. I actually have allergies. So, you know, so looking for that, again, it's a muscle you develop. But, and we're about at the end of time. So, Raj, I really want to, it is so great to get you on. And I want to say, this came because I started playing with, working with Greg Heyer and using some more humor. And then Greg said, people want more of that. And I said, well, why don't I get the pro that I learned from on in a show. And so this came by the audience request to have more on humor. So I'm going to say, if they want more, let us know. And what area or questions, we could do another show on this. You're
sure.
Great. Do you still do the phone coaching on this for professionals as well, for hire?
Yep. I speak live in the workplace, and then I work one-on-one by phone and email. Yep. I love doing that. It's rewarding for me and the sales team. So,
and you're a great musician too. That's what I enjoy. I really, that's where we got the studio in the background there. And so you walk the talk, you're teaching.
I appreciate it, Martin.
And I'm looking forward to, been invited to be on your, on the site for getting, I'm excited to revamp my talk, Instant Humor, Just Add Life. And I think it's time to roll it out again. It's time, people need to laugh more. I think it's a survival tool. You know, it's just as we must have time for grieving, we need time for laughter.
Well, we're thrilled to have you on there, and you have so much information. You are the man to go to when it comes to social media and business connections. I mean, I'm so impressed with just watching you over the years. Wow. Just what you're doing is fantastic. So keep up the great work.
Excellent. So what's the best way for them to learn more about you? Let's wrap up with that, and we'll put it below in the podcast and on the live video.
Well, they can either email Raj at rajbates.com, or they can call me 919-604-5488.
Excellent. Excellent. We'll put the other, and we'll probably put the Speakers Bureau on there too, in the link as well. So they'll get both.
Sure.
Looking forward to, and I'm hoping maybe one day we'll get you back to the Raleigh area. I'd love to, I'm going to commit to working on my intro. What do you call it? The guy that starts it, you invited me to do once in a while, the first person. MC. Yeah. So I'm going to make a commitment to work on some new humor for that. So, and then I'm going to try to get you to move back to Raleigh area so we can get that humor class going and play together again.
Yep. It would be great fun. Great fun.
Well, excellent.
And if you're out in my way, man.
What's that?
If you're out in my way, New Mexico, come visit.
Oh, I'd love to. I'd love to. Well, Raj, this has been great. This is Martin Brossman, and I work with Greg Heyer on linking into sales. And this is Let Us Know What You Want. This show came about our audience asking for new information. So look forward to hearing your comments below. Share it. Give us feedback. Tweet it out. We'll have a hashtag with this show as well. And we'll be back soon. So, Rod, thanks.
Bye-bye.